Welcome back to the Fluent Edge podcast.
I'm Dr. Howie Jacobson, executive coach, author, and mindset strategist.
And I'm Sean Watson, your English communication coach. This episode is for anyone who's ever thought, I know English, so why do I still go blank when meetings move too fast?
Let me give you the mindset reframe right up front. So your brain is not failing because you're not intelligent enough or capable enough. It's failing because you're trying to get it to do something that it was simply not designed to do, to manage too much in your conscious mind and the exact same moment that you need to project confidence and authority.
Today, we're really talking about why fast conversations in English can sometimes feel overwhelming and what's happening in your language processing, and also how to stop translating and start responding automatically. A lot of advanced English learners think, if I just learn more vocabulary, I'll finally feel fluent in meetings. But that's usually not the issue. The real issue is processing speed.
And here's why this matters from a leadership standpoint, because knowledge is extremely important, but it's not the thing that's going to get you noticed or promoted if you can't get it out. So the leaders who are known for their knowledge are actually the ones who can access their thinking under pressure.
From your work, Howie, coaching executives and leaders, when someone freezes under pressure, what's usually happening at the mindset level?
Yeah, and I love that question in this context because you're introducing a whole new way of thinking about it that I hadn't considered, just about language processing speed. When I think about freezing under pressure, it's generally because the person's mindset is, I am being evaluated here, whether it's by someone else or by myself. It's that I am performing. And Sean, you are a performer. You have been a performer for much of your life, and you understand the difference between getting on stage in a costume in front of 5,000 people and doing your thing and being in a room having a conversation with someone. But if you think that being in the room is the same thing as being on stage, then it can become debilitating. You can start observing yourself doing everything, and that's just another layer of processing, as opposed to if you're just in a really good conversation with someone, you're simply experiencing the conversation. You're not curating your own performance.
Well said. Yeah. And another thing, too, that I experienced as a professional singer and actor on stage, I was often singing in languages that I don't speak very well. And even though I learned the text and studied it for months and understood what I was singing about, obviously, but you still have moments in a live performance when you're singing in that second language that you have to kind of remind yourself and think about it again, right? Like, what is the word and what is my action? I think it's really second guessing rather than just trying to translate in my head spontaneously.
Yeah, and it's a great example of a fluent English speaker is not doing what you did. They're not just memorizing their lines and the expected lines, right? They're gaining an organic knowledge. And I think what we're talking about today is in order to experience communication organically, in some sense, we have to pull back and not try to get everything the very second it's spoken.
Yes. And I would also add to that in business meetings, the language pressure can make it even worse because people are interrupting each other and somebody might suddenly pivot or change the topic, or they use lots of abbreviations. And I've just learned recently that ROI, I think even in Spain, they might just say ROI. So even with abbreviations, they could vary from country to country, even though we're still using a lot of the same business terms internationally, the way that we say them can be different. Like in China, for example, they don't talk about using an app on their phone, they call it an APP.
Probably easier to say. It probably sounds more like Chinese. Right? And ending in a vowel, short syllables.
Speaking of syllables, people, when they're speaking quickly, like I sometimes catch myself doing, we swallow the syllables. We're not enunciating. We're not clear. It's like when somebody calls a company and speaks with the receptionist, often the receptionist has to repeat the same phrase about who the company is multiple times a day, and they start to swallow what they're saying.
I just got back yesterday from a week in Rome, so I don't speak Italian, but I'm learning Spanish. And Spanish and Italian are close enough that almost everyone in Rome could get by with my Spanish. And I found I could understand their Spanish much better than I understand Spanish spoken in Spain. Because there, it's their second language and they're not swallowing syllables. They're speaking the way they learned in school. So it was slower. It was simpler words. It was much easier for me to take in than a normal conversation in Spain.
Right. And I was just thinking of swallowing syllables. So somebody who swallows or eats syllables, what would we call them? Like you call a vegetarian or a vegan or a pescatarian, but would it be a syllabarian? Yeah.
Now 40% of my brain is off on pun cycles. So, Sean, as I said, I haven't thought about performance in terms of linguistic issues. So what do you see as the biggest mistake that advanced learners make during these fast-paced meetings?
This is something I can talk about in my own life. I'm guilty of this just as much as anyone else. It's trying to understand every single word. For strong communicators, they need to focus on what is the core meaning of something. And we'll talk about that a little bit later, but it has to do with chunking. Chunking is when you try to think of a group of words instead of just a single word, which just takes too much processing power. So I think strong communicators really need to focus on what is the emotional tone that they're listening to from the speaker, what is the intention, and if you try to focus on every syllable, your brain just overloads eventually.
To me, this reminds me of how I learned to read. I had to focus on every single letter, whereas once I became more facile with it, I can look at a whole syllable. Come, mun, e, ke, tors, communicators, and then entire words, focus, and then a whole sentence. Strong communicators focus on. I'm actually taking in less bits because my brain has combined lots and lots of bits into smaller ones. It's abstracted. Is that kind of what you're talking about in terms of listening?
Absolutely. And here's kind of a breakthrough idea to think about. The enemy is not speed. I think the enemy is the translation loop. This is when we're spontaneously translating everything and we're breaking it down into one word at a time. Those two things tend to slow down your processing power.
And that's great because it's no longer about, okay, I'm not good enough, I'm not smart enough, I'm not fast enough. I have what it takes right now, but I'm just using the wrong system. So that's a completely different conversation about skill and identity.
Yes, indeed. So how will you work with leaders on identity and self-perception? So why is that reframe from I'm not good enough to I'm using the wrong system? Why can that be so powerful psychologically?
Because it gives you locus of control. If I'm not good enough, what can I do about that? I can hide it from people. I can quit. I can accept that I'm never going to rise in my career. If I say I'm using the wrong system, then I can shift it. I have power. And it's what's known in the literature as a growth mindset. A fixed mindset is either, okay, I'm good enough or I'm not good enough. And most people who arise in organizations from a certain point have had their whole identity, their whole life has been, I'm good enough. From elementary school, they get challenged more. They get put into the better classes in secondary school. They pass the exams. They keep going up and up and up. And so it's very easy to have this fixed mindset of I'm good enough, I'm smart enough. And the minute you hit an obstacle, it can be devastating because you are the thing you've always been. And now it's just been shown to you that you've reached your limit, as opposed to someone with a growth mindset who might not have done so well earlier in life, but said, I'm not the best math student, but I can study more, I can learn, I can ask for help. And by the time they reach the same point and they reach the obstacle of these meetings are too fast, I'm not taking enough in, I'm not able to be fluent in response, what do I need to do to get better? And you're saying it can be as simple as shifting the systems you're using.
Yes, the system shift in language is quite concrete. Fluent speakers usually don't build sentences word by word. They retrieve language automatically in chunks. If you think of chunks of things like long time no see or how's it going? Or, I'm sorry, I didn't catch that. So they're thinking of things in chunks rather than going through each individual word. Or if I were to say, that's a fair point, or let me add to that. So thinking of language in chunks or groups rather than just parsing individual words.
So when your language becomes more automatic, then you have mental space freed up to listen strategically, to read the room, and then decide when is the right time for you to offer your thoughts. So chunking is the way to do that. But when we're listening, when my brain is listening to Spanish, if it's listening to the radio, or I went to the chiropractor today who doesn't speak any English and she's trying to explain things to me, I feel like I'm drowning and I'm reaching for words. Like, here's a piece of wood floating. I got that word. How can we reduce that translation habit? Because it feels so urgent in the moment to just grab every single word and go through a mental process. And of course, by the time I do that, she's four sentences down and I've missed everything.
It's a paradigm shift because you have to train the mind to think in terms of groups or chunks instead of just single units. So it doesn't happen overnight. But I know even with me now, as I've mentioned on the podcast before, my wife is French speaking. And in the evening, she likes to watch her French shows, sometimes from France and sometimes from Quebec. And in the old days, I would just go off and do my own thing because I found myself trying to translate things word for word. But recently, I've seen quite a breakthrough because now I relax a little bit more into an episode or a talk show, whatever she's watching, and I allow my mind to be open to the idea of trying to catch patterns or chunks rather than smaller units of words. And honestly, I can actually start to feel a difference. We were watching a drama the other night, and I leaned over to my wife and I said, "Can you believe she said that?" And she said, "Oh, you caught all of that?" And I said, "Yeah, I actually caught it based on the context, the situation." But yeah, I can already feel a shift in that.
So does this correlate in any way with effort? Because when I'm listening, trying to get every word, it feels effortful. Like when I put on the Spanish radio in the morning and I'm just making breakfast, I'm actually paying less attention. So it feels like it shouldn't work. Is that what you're talking about in terms of a broader spectrum? Or is it the same amount of effort just directed differently?
It's the same amount of effort initially. But I think what I would suggest, and I often suggest this to people I work with, start to develop a word bank or a phrase bank of typical chunking of words. So for example, if you're in a meeting and somebody suggests something and you say something like, I'd approach it differently, or that's worth considering. So I think just creating even a small list of phrases that might come up in your workplace, start to compile those. When phrases become more automatic, your brain starts to bypass grammar construction and looking at things word by word. And it's kind of an added trust in your brain's ability to cope with that. But again, in many languages, we tend to repeat a lot of chunks, like, "How's it going? What's up? Nice to meet you. Could you repeat that, please?" You know, these are phrases that we use all the time. So I would just say at the beginning, think of common situations in your life, whether it's listening to the news in the morning or whether you're in a business meeting or you're watching a drama. Just start to write down the patterns and commit them to your memory as much as you can. And I think this will dramatically increase fluency speed.
Yeah. I wonder if AI has a role here. Let's say if I turn on voice notes and listen to 45 minutes of the radio and then ask, "Can you come up with a list of 10 phrases of 2 to 5 words that I'm likely to hear over and over again on this broadcast?"
Great idea. And as somebody said to me the other day, when every sentence feels like construction work, then meetings feel exhausting. Like if you're just looking at it brick by brick instead of a larger view of what's going on, it will be exhausting and tiring and you'll feel discouraged. So you're right. I think AI could be helpful. And again, this is sort of how AI works anyway, trying to guess what you're going to say next. So in meetings, that's the same idea. You can kind of gauge certain phrases that could be used over and over again. So if marketing owns onboarding, but product controls activation metrics, we probably need alignment before rollout, because otherwise customer success gets overwhelmed Q3. Okay, so if we just take a moment there, that's exactly the kind of sentence that causes non-native English speakers to freeze because it's full of so much jargon. So the instinct when you hear that is to try and follow each word. But I wouldn't do that. I would focus on the core meaning. I read it quickly, but I would say the core meaning might be teams need alignment before rollout, for example. So everything else is just background or just context.
I have to say, I am a native English speaker, and my brain froze when I heard that sentence.
Yeah.
So I have a question about this. If the move is to find the core message, at what point do I ask for clarification? Do I wait till after the meeting and say, what was that? Or do I just assume that I've gotten enough context to be smart about this?
Well, that's kind of the next point I wanted to make. This is a technique that you can use. And I know through my travels, instead of saying, I don't understand you, it's always better to use the echo confirmation to repeat back to the speaker. For example, you could say alignment before rollout, or you mean onboarding ownership. What you can do is you can take key words that you might know from the overall jargon and simply repeat one phrase back as a question. So you could even write that down in a meeting, or if you're in a Zoom call, it's even easier. Nobody can see you doing that. So just simply use echo confirmation. I'm sure you've experienced this in your travels too, or you may have talked about this in the past, Howie, that people might get annoyed if you ask them to repeat themselves, or if you say, I don't understand. But if you try to say, oh, you mean you were trying to say that the bus only comes twice a day? Ah, see, yeah, right?
Yeah, and it's a wonderful technique for getting people to say more. Coaches use it all the time to just repeat the last three or four meaningful words in a sentence. And I teach this as a technique, and coaches don't like using it. It feels gimmicky. And then I will point out that in a conversation that I just had with them, I used it 20 times in a row and they didn't notice.
Yeah, precisely. And the other technique that you can sometimes use is the 5-second rule. So if you miss something that somebody says, pause before panicking, and you don't have to fill the silence immediately. And this is especially true when you're in a one-to-one or one-on-one meeting. Often the speaker will just naturally rephrase on their own, especially if they know that English isn't your first language. So sometimes just taking a break, a pause, and we know this in negotiations. Sometimes the silent person in the negotiation forces the other person to make a deal.
Different cultures have different degrees of comfort with silence, with how long you can be silent, what it means if you're silent. So what would you say for people who are adjusting to an English language environment? What are the emotional and psychological and power dynamics of silence?
That's a tough one because to a certain degree, it's subjective. I have a friend here in Canada who tends to inject a lot of silence in between everything that he says. But if you're working with somebody new, for example, if I'm a non-native English speaker and I'm in a company and I've got a new manager or a new supervisor or whatever, obviously you have to gauge things a little bit. But I think once the relationship has been established and you have some rapport, then you can understand what's an appropriate amount of silence. I don't always think it's just a cultural difference. It has to do with using your own emotional intelligence and also becoming comfortable with the concept of silence. There's a beautiful provincial park a couple of hours from our home here. It's called Silent Lake Provincial Park. And every time we go there, it's one of the loudest parks I've ever been to. People walk through the forest and they fill up the silence with crazy things they say, like, ah, has anybody seen my tweezers? It's almost like people are awkward with the fact that the park is called Silent Lake.
Mm.
The forest just echoes with people's voices every time we've been there. There's no silence.
On Monday, we were in the Sistine Chapel and they prepared us well in advance. The tour guide, this is a holy place, sacred, no speaking. We got there. Of course, it was, you know, there's like 500 people crammed in like sardines. It was really loud. Like everybody's sort of whispering, but there's hundreds of people whispering.
We went through the same experience. And yeah, that's a perfect example, the Sistine Chapel effect kind of thing. Yeah, please be quiet. This is a sacred place. And then it sounds like coffee hour down the street.
The last question, I think, is about thinking in one's native language and then having to go through the process of translation. Even though they can speak English at a high level, they're still thinking, why does that still happen? And what can people do about it?
Here's where I would dive a little bit deeper into this idea of switching how you listen. And if you think of one side of your brain as being very analytical, you want to switch this to a more automatic brain. So you're trusting your brain to absorb larger phrases and not just single words. So with fluency, it requires a kind of procedural memory. There's repetition, there's retrieval. You have to think, okay, what was that word? It's on the tip of my tongue. What was it again? And then there's actual speaking, and then there's reacting to what other people have said. And then, of course, there's improvising as well. It's really moving from just seeing the other language or perceiving the other language under a microscope in an analytical way and allowing automatic processes to start to develop. And it's different for everybody. And when you do need clarification, try to be specific. Don't say something like, sorry, I didn't understand. It's not specific, and it puts pressure on the other person to try to guess what exactly you didn't understand. So you could say something like, that presentation moved quickly. Could you explain the onboarding part again? So really try to be as specific as you can with your clarifications, rather than just saying, I don't understand, or could you repeat that?
I'm going to have to use that one because I am all over no entiendo. So that's a good one for me.
So here's a suggestion for you. Try to narrate your day. So a few times a day, you can describe what you're doing in English out loud or to yourself silently. You could say something like, I'm reviewing the client proposal, or I'm stuck in traffic trying to get home for dinner, or I need to follow up after lunch. So start to practice thinking of phrases rather than just single words that you have to learn. This really trains your brain to access language in real-world contexts, not just study contexts. So Howie, you've coached leaders through high-stakes presentations and boardroom moments. What's the mindset shift that separates the ones who rehearse effectively from the ones who just go through the motions?
The mindset is, first of all, what am I trying to accomplish? What's the goal or the strategy, or where am I trying to get to? I also want to think about the other person. So if it's a conversation, I want to think about, what do they want? Why are they at this meeting? What's important to them? What might get in their way? And finally, I want to focus on the connection, that whatever we get done or don't get done in the meeting, one of my goals is that we have a better relationship at the end of the meeting than we had at the beginning. And that can happen even if we disagree. It can happen even if we're at odds. We can still ask questions about what the other person sees. We can say, okay, I see you're weighing this risk differently than I am, and I understand that we're coming from different places here. And if it's about communication and relationship, then I think that automatically pushes the idea of performance that we talked about at the beginning off to the side, where it doesn't become so important. So you don't feel so much pressure. You're just in the flow, working with someone else to get something done.
Right. Slower speech, even if you slow down by 20 or 30%, this gives you time to retrieve the right language, and it signals, it shows confidence. So shorter sentences, more intentional pauses, and that's really what communication should sound like, especially in a business context.
There was a movie, I think it was in the 80s, called Being There. Do you remember?
Oh, I love that film with Peter Sellers. Yeah.
Peter Sellers plays a very, very simple gardener who, through mistaken identity, is thought to be a deep thinker and brilliant mind. And he speaks slowly in the simplest of sentences. And instead of letting people know that he's not brilliant, the more he does it, the more profound they think he is.
I love that film so much. It's just a classic. Please subscribe and share The Fluent Edge with friends or colleagues who are working on their English or leadership communication. And if you're looking for support beyond the podcast, we've each opened up spots for one-on-one coaching. Howie helps professionals avoid burnout, lead with purpose, and shift their mindset for sustainable success.
And if you're focused on English clarity, global presence, or confident communications, why don't you book a free discovery call with Sean to explore how the two of you can sharpen your voice and impact together. And you can find both of our links in the description and the show notes. So everybody, thanks again for listening. Remember to think clearly, speak boldly, and remember, most people do neither.
Your voice is ready. Your potential is limitless. Go show the world.